We are now having our last formal, informal talk on Vimalakirti Sutra here in our Zendo. It's talk 13. It's been 13 talks, or 14, this will be the 14th talk actually. I just downloaded Kate's from Sunday, that was 13. And Kate sends her regards to everyone here. She's busy getting ready for Loon Lake. And just to let you know, tonight we'll end a little bit early so that we can help unpack this Zendo and move everything down so it can easily be loaded on Saturday for the pickup crew to load everything in the van. Pop-up Zendos, that's what we specialize in. So I'm looking tonight on Chapter 12 of the Vimalakirti Sutra. And at least in the Burton Watson translation, he translates the title as Seeing Akshobhya Buddha. Seeing Akshobhya Buddha. But actually, I'm not going to talk about Akshobhya Buddha. Let's just talk about Buddha for a moment. Who is the Buddha? I wonder, you know, what comes to your mind when you think of Buddha? Because, you know, Buddhist images are everywhere, right? They're found in restaurants and gardens, coffee tables, tattoos, apparel, accessories, drug-related products, artwork, of course, home decor, food products, novelty items, and wellness merchandise. Buddhas are everywhere. Oh, and snacks, right? I was looking at this bag of chips with a big Buddha on it the other day. What the heck? So I found it interesting and a little bit upsetting that in the name of the Buddha, advertisers and manufacturers are trying to make the claim that happiness comes from consumption. Buy me, eat me, wear me, be happy. And I wonder if most of the people wearing jewelry or t-shirts or bags adorned with Buddha, for example, if that's signaling the importance of Buddha's teaching in their own lives, or is it just being fashionable? I suspect fashionable. Now, this may be a good topic for discussion at another time, but it's clear almost everyone is acquainted with the Buddha, at least in some vague way. So I wonder, who or what is the Buddha for you? So let me unpack the Buddha a little bit here. It connects with the chapter. So the Buddhist tradition tells us that a baby named Siddhartha was born in Lumbini, in an area that's now Nepal, to a royal or near-royal parents of the Shakya clan. And in his late 20s, Siddhartha experienced a spiritual crisis. And then, as was customary at the time, he renounced his home life, leaving his wife and son under the care of his wealthy father and aunt, who raised them as a mother. And then he spent years wandering as a shramana, studying under various teachers. A shramana is kind of like a wandering ascetic kind of person. And again, as was custom, he begged for food, practiced severe asceticism, undertook religious practices like meditation and other kinds of practices. But at one point, Siddhartha rejected asceticism and devoted himself to deep meditation and awakened under a tree that we now call the Bodhi tree, or the tree of awakening, which is actually a kind of fig. And after his profound awakening, he took the title of Buddha, one who is awake. That's kind of one way to translate it. And he became known as Shakyamuni Buddha, the Buddha of the Shakya clan, because that's what his clan was. And the Buddha laid out a path known as the Middle Way, and taught everyone who came to him as he wandered around the Gangetic plain of India. And at the age of 80, he died in Kushinagara. So maybe this is your understanding of the Buddha. A human being who gained great insight into the nature of the human condition, and through his teachings was able to guide others, help them shed their self-imposed bonds. Certainly the early Buddhist writings paint a picture of Buddha much like this, a very wise and compassionate person who was thoroughly human. He was shown, I'm sure, great reverence and respect by the whole Sangha, both lay and ordained Sangha, but was not associated with a divinity or some kind of outside spiritual force. But here's another view of the Buddha. A Buddha has achieved the highest awakening due to their boundless compassion and dedication to help all beings. In becoming fully awakened, a Buddha becomes what we may call a supra-mundane being with great powers and a lifetime that does not seem to come to an end. In the Mahayana Sutras, like the Vimalakirti Sutta we've been reading over these past weeks, the human qualities of Shakyamuni Buddha are upgraded, like my laptop was just upgraded, to superpowers, and great mythic stories about Shakyamuni Buddha and the myriad other Buddhas throughout this universe are woven into the sutras. For example, in the Vimalakirti Sutra, the Buddha does perform some amazing feats. Magical, almost, feats. But basically, the Buddha offers teachings and aid to help everyone understand really what leads to an awakened life. Because even in these sutras, there is no magic that will lead to awakening. In other words, awakening comes only through the discipline of practicing the Dharma. As Vimalakirti says in the sutra, the Buddha serves as a bridge and a crossing for living beings. The Buddha serves as a bridge and a crossing for living beings. But each of us must walk a walk across that bridge. Nobody can do that for you or for me. So I wonder, is this a bit closer to your view of the Buddha? When you hear the word Buddha, this kind of being with some pretty amazing powers, like we see in the Vimalakirti Sutra. But there's one more a view of the Buddha that I thought I'd like to present tonight. And this is also found in the Mahayana Sutras, or texts. And this is the Buddha as the absolute truth itself. Sometimes called, in the text, the Dharmakaya Buddha, which often is translated in English as the Cosmic Buddha. In other words, the Buddha that is the personification of ultimate reality. So many Buddhas. But fortunately for us, the question of what or who is the Buddha is addressed in the Vimalakirti Sutra, in this chapter 12, seeing Akyashobhya Buddha. So that's good news. We don't have to think about it too much. So, here's a quote from the sutra. At that time, the world-honored one said to Vimalakirti, "You want to see the thus come one. You wanted to see the thus come one. Now, how do you regard the thus come one?" Which is just another way of saying the Buddha, right? You want to see the Buddha? Oh, here's the Buddha. What do you see?
Gosh, wouldn't that make a great question in the Dokusan room?
What do you see in front of you? Well, over these past weeks, we have come to know that Vimalakirti is a great bodhisattva and a great teacher, well respected by the Buddha. So now we'll get the final answer. Or maybe not. So Vimalakirti said, in response to the Buddha's request, how do you regard the Buddha now? As I would regard my own true form or reality, in that same way do I regard the Thus Come One. I regard the Thus Come One as not existing from past times, not departing in the future, not abiding here at the present. That's just a taste. I won't read all the description that Vimalakirti gives as his answer, but here are a few more lines just to us to take in as best we can. He does not arise out of the four great elements, earth, air, water, etc., fire, but is the same as the empty sky. He is not identical in form with others, but not different in form. Not of his own form, not of some other form, not lacking form, not acquiring form. He is not on this shore, this place, not on the other shore, not in midstream, and yet he guides living beings. He is not this, he is not that. He does not show himself in this, he does not show himself in that. One cannot know him through wisdom. One cannot be conscious of him through consciousness. He is without darkness, without brightness, without name, without form, without strength, without weakness. He is not pure, not defiled, nor in any direction, not removed from direction, not conditioned, not unconditioned, without purport, without explanation. He is not charitable, not stingy, does not observe the precepts, does not violate the precepts. Does not press forward, does not slack, is not common mind, is not distracted, is not wise, is not stupid, is not sincere, is not deceitful, does not arrive, does not depart, does not go out, does not enter in. He is cut off from all that can be said in words. And it goes on. He cannot be labeled, cannot be measured. He is beyond all laboring, beyond all measuring. He is not big, he is not little. Not to be seen, not to be heard, not to be awakened to, not to be known. No words or explanations whatever can distinguish and depict him. Well, that's quite a Buddha. So this view of Vimalakirti basically is telling what the Buddha is not. And this is very similar to one that's used in the Christian tradition of apophatic theology. Is that a new word for you? Apophatic theology means a negative theology. So for example, it's a kind of theological thinking which tries to approach the divine, approach God, by negation, to speak in terms of what may not be said about the perfect nature of God, for example. Because how can you describe something that's perfect? Vimalakirti tells the audience that surrounds him, and he tells us, that the nature of Buddha is unfathomable, inconceivable. There are no words, phrases, poems that fully express, can fully encompass the nature of a Buddha, or Buddha nature. Whatever is said, it is not. But wait a moment, let's go back to the beginning of the chapter when Vimalakirti said,
As I would regard my own true form or reality, in that same way do I regard the Buddha, the Thus Come One. Vimalakirti starts by telling us that the ineffable nature of a Buddha is the same as his own. And Vimalakirti, remember, is a layman with a family, worldly responsibilities. He's like us in many ways. He is informing us that our true nature as well is beyond whatever we perceive it to be. That it is as vast as the empty sky. Now, the Zen tradition has long upheld this view in its own quirky way. For example, the 9th century Chinese Zen teacher, Linji Yishuan, famously told his disciples, if you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. If you meet the Buddha on the road, kill him. And killing the Buddha, of course, means killing our own conceptualizations, killing the belief that we understand it all, killing our image of the Buddha as somehow out there, separate from me, separate from you. In other words, Linji is telling his monks and telling us, let go of your limited ideas of awakening somehow being in the future, that awakening is for others but not for me, that the Buddha is somehow out there. So both Linji and Vimalakirti are offering, I think, some really important teachings. So we might wonder, well, okay, how? How do we open more to our own Buddha nature? And while it is true, each of us must find our own way, there is one practice that's offered by the Buddhist tradition that I'd like to suggest. Let me first read from one of the earliest Buddhist texts. This is from an early Pali text. The Buddha said, quote, any kind of feeling whatsoever, any kind of perception whatsoever, any kind of volition formations whatsoever, any kind of consciousness whatsoever, whether past, present, or future, internal or external, gross or subtle, inferior or superior, far or near, all consciousness should be seen as it really is, with correct wisdom. Thus, this is not mine. I am not that. This is not myself. Now, I read that kind of quickly. This is not mine. I am not that. This is not myself. This is the practice of not identifying with the limited view of who you are, however you perceive or understand yourself to be. Judgments, assumptions, labels, habitual stories, past experiences, all of these are not you. They are just assumptions, judgments, stories. Negative and positive thoughts and feelings arise and need to be seen and acknowledged, of course. But they are not you. And they certainly are not the whole of you. They do not indicate the vastness of your nature. Because remember, your nature is the same as the nature of a Buddha. So here's what I recommend. I mean, you may not believe this.
But here's what I recommend to try. Try this short phrase when you find yourself caught in some kind of afflictive emotion, like anger or jealousy or pride, or maybe you're visited by profound sadness, frustration. Or also when you find yourself comparing yourself to others, how lousy you are, or how good you are, favorably or unfavorably, say this to yourself. This is not mine. I am not that. This is not myself. Try this, please, and see if it's beneficial. See if it helps to loosen those bonds that you have defined yourself with. This practice of using the negative, not this, not that, is found in many traditions. Christian one I've already mentioned, and of course, just talked about the Buddhist one now. But it's also found, for example, in Hinduism. Maybe you've heard the Sanskrit phrase, neti neti, which means not this, not this. And it too is a spiritual practice. Whatever you conceive of as the divine, you can say, not yet, or neti neti, not this, not this. Go deeper, always. So I thought I'd end with a little poem, which I think, tongue-in-cheek, kind of expresses this quite well. This is not mine, I am not that, this is not myself. When we think we've got it, right? So this is a poem by Jane Hirschfield, the great American poet, contemporary poet. And she titled this Advice to Myself. The computer file, of which I have no recollection, is labeled Advice to Myself. I click it open, look, scroll down further. The screen stays backlit and empty. Thus I meet myself again, hopeful and useless, a mystery, precisely as I must have done on August 19th, 2010, 11:08 a.m. Isn't that a little great poem? Advice to myself. Isn't that what we want? Tell me what to do. And then you look. And what you get is this. Oh. Thank you all so much for listening over these past weeks. The retreat will start on Saturday at Loon Lake, and we'll be posting talks daily, hopefully. That will work okay. Sometimes the internet and gets a little weird there, but we'll try our best. And I hope you'll be able to join us here on Zoom for the retreat. You're welcome to come in as much as you can. And also, they'll be sitting here on Wednesday and on Sunday. We have that covered. So someone will be here to open the door and welcome you. And you can just sit with everybody at Loon Lake here, if you like. Or just at home with your cup of tea beside you and the screen.